to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today we've travelled to Plymouth. If you are new to the pod, welcome. It is a treat to be on the road. One of the great things about recording Monday Mile is that we're walking whilst talking, and you can join us whilst you listen, whether you're on your morning commute or just heading out to get some headspace. Today's guest is Hannah Mills. She's not just your Tokyo 2020 flag bearer, she's a two-time world champion in the women's 470 class and a three-time Olympic medalist. Casual. Two of them, let's not forget, are gold. She's also a passionate environmentalist and an IOC sustainability ambassador and a global SailGP sustainability spokesperson. Hannah Mills.
Hello.
Welcome to Monday Mile.
Thanks, Amy.
We're in Plymouth.
We are.
What brings us to Plymouth?
We're here. We've got the British SailGP event this weekend coming up. So we're in Plymouth.
We can't not mention that you're joining me on a stroll whilst being 7 months pregnant.
I know.
Congratulations. We can walk slow.
Okay, yeah.
Have you been keeping active whilst pregnant, or is it really tough?
Honestly, no. No, the first few months were grim. Like, I was literally a zombie on a sofa. I couldn't do anything. I could barely hold a conversation. So I just did nothing.
That does not advertise pregnancy to me.
Yeah, everyone is different. Let's go with that. Yeah, so nothing. And then I started to do a little bit, and then you start to get bigger. I'm trying to do some. Walking, look at me. I'm walking.
Yeah, fine. We're here, we're walking, and it's sunny.
Yeah.
That's got to be a rarity when you sail in the UK.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, last year the Plymouth event was tropical as well. I missed it because I was in Tokyo, but it was beautiful. So I think it's just Plymouth must be sunny.
I love how you just casually drop Tokyo in there whilst you accomplished the third Olympic medal. Let's not forget it was a gold one. And also carried the flag for our country. Now, Hannah, that's incredible. Not many people have the opportunity or can say they carried the Team GB flag at the Olympics.
Yeah, it's nuts. I still can't get my head around it. And when I see photos, like it was the year anniversary a few days ago, and I see photos and I'm like, that's me. I can't. It's just weird. Yeah, imposter syndrome, 100%. So weird.
But definitely not imposter syndrome. You have earned every single right to be there.
Yeah, it's just nuts.
Has life changed much since then?
Yeah, it has actually. I mean, I'm pregnant, so that's quite a difference. I retired from Olympic sailing, so it was kind of a whole new what now?
Yeah.
You know, that classic massive challenge. I think after an Olympics, I'm sure you experienced it, the Olympic blues, you know, you feel a bit lost. You've had this incredible experience, win or lose, the Olympic Games is just insane.
Yeah.
And then it stops.
An abrupt ending, isn't it?
Very abrupt. Very abrupt. And suddenly, day to day, you got no reason really to get out of bed necessarily. And you're like, okay, I need to find the next thing. What's next? What am I going to do?
Did you know going into the Tokyo Games that it would be your last? Was that part of the plan? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was. It felt the right time. You know, I'd like had such a transition in that Olympic cycle with all of the sustainability work I was doing. Opportunities in sailing were suddenly starting to come in terms of other sailing outside the Olympic Games for females. It just felt the right time. So I did know, but that kind of adds pressure in a way. Yeah. You're like, this is the last one.
Yeah. Well, you went out in style.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. Now, let's talk SailGP, because we're currently in a dockyard. Is that the correct lingo?
Yeah, I think it's the exact correct lingo, yeah.
And quite literally, if you're just tuning into the audio, we've had the Australian boat literally pretty much transported over our head as it enters the water. Talk me through what SailGP is.
Yeah, well, SailGP is a new sailing competition. So it's in its third season. Sort of format is a bit like Formula One in terms of we have 11 events, so not as many as them, but we have 11 events nation by nation. So we've got Australia, we've got Britain, USA, lots of different nations competing. And the racing is very different to what I've done before, like very, very different. The boats go almost 100 kilometres an hour, so that's a lot faster than my Olympic boat, that's for sure.
That almost sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it's mostly okay. Yeah, there's definitely some pretty hairy moments, but mostly okay. And the racing is really different. It's super short, so the races are like 10 minutes long. You've got boundaries on the race course, so the boats are kept really close together. So that adds to the excitement.
That also sounds scary.
Yeah. It is.
So it's an adrenaline-fueled version of traditional sailing?
I would say so, yeah. It's just the next iteration, you know. It's, you know, foiling, which is sort of a newish type of sailing, which is where the boats fly out the water, they go a lot faster, has just come in. And all the kids want to do it, you know, all the youth want to do it. It's all they talk about when you go to sailing clubs. Like, I want to go foiling, because it's exciting and it's fast.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, I bet you can.
It's similar to the e-foil, correct?
Yes.
So when you sort of hover up out of the water, it's a feeling that you can't really describe. Is it, I've seen you've tried e-foiling.
Yeah.
Is that feeling of the lift up out of the water similar on an e-foil to when you're on a big boat travelling at 100 kilometres an hour?
It's similar. Yeah, it's similar, but yeah, you're going a lot faster on these.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the acceleration is...
That's why when I saw you try e-foiling, you didn't look scared because you've gone a lot faster, whereas I was...
Terrified.
Yeah.
I remember you saying, actually.
I was. You're like, come down and come e-foiling. I'm like, yeah, I think I'm just going to leave that as like a small passion project that I had, because... It's quite scary.
So. Yeah, well, they're pretty sharp, the foils underneath, aren't they? You definitely have to avoid them.
So the utmost respect. What's incredible to me, as an outsider looking into SailGP, is the fact that as a female, you have such a dominant role within this programme. How important is it for women to be brought into this?
Yeah, it's incredibly important. You know, like, we look at loads of different sports, and women's sport is just gaining so much momentum, which is really exciting. But I think what I love about sailing and SailGP is that women and men can compete together on the same boat, same prize money, same podium. And I think that's really exciting. And I think, you know, think about myself as a young girl, if I was seeing this growing up, I'd just be like, wow. And I think equally for young boys, seeing women and men on the same step, on the same boat, I think that's massive. It sends the right messaging. So we're at the early phase with SailGP. You know, last year, the Women's Pathway Programme got started, which is essentially trying to get the experience and opportunity for women to upskill, because, like I said, this is not traditional sailing.
When you say upskill, what does that mean? Like, how different is it for you going from sailing a 470 to one of these monstrous boats?
Yeah, I mean, actually, the role I'm doing, the strategist role, which is essentially communicating, picking what way we're going to go around the race course.
That's why a woman's doing the job, communication.
that role is very similar. You know, it's tactics, strategy, it's all of the things that I do day in, day out. It's all the other roles that are really different, because these boats, they're not just traditional, like, pull the ropes and stuff happens. Yeah. We've got a steering wheel, we've got buttons, got a Game Boy controller that controls part of the boat. It's totally different. So there is this experience gap, and these boats are dangerous. So we have to make sure that anyone who comes onto the boat is ready to sail it.
Hannah, tell us about the Women's Pathway Programme, because I know that's something that you're very actively involved in, especially now. You are carrying a bubba.
I am, a little girl, actually.
Congratulations, a girl, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, so the Women's Pathway Programme started in season two, and basically it's trying to get women onto the boats with that experience, so that hopefully, in however many years' time, we have gender equity on the boats, and that's the goal. So, yeah, it's a really exciting programme to be part of, and obviously I was part of the start, which is always a cool thing to be in, and, you know, hopefully we're building that pathway for the next generation of women to have opportunity.
What do you see gender equity as within a setup like this?
I think for me it's about obviously getting women on the boats, but obviously you want women to be on the boats who have earned their spot there, you know. Yeah. They're good, they're really, really good at their job. I think that's crucial. But it's not just about on the boat, it's about the whole team environment. And actually, what's cool with SailGP, if you look around, there's a lot of women in the workforce involved in this elite level of sport. And so that's crucial as well, because you just want the whole atmosphere to feel inclusive, everyone's got an opportunity, and it just means it normalises it, you know? It just normalises it, it's ace.
And that's what we want, and that's what we need to see more of across the board in sport in general.
Mm.
But let's get into the nitty-gritty, because I'm intrigued. As a SailGP athlete, physically, what are the demands, what's the day-to-day routine like to be fit enough to handle one of these beasts?
Beast, yeah, and it's a beast, that's for sure. So some of the roles are super physical.
Yeah.
The guys at the front that are grinding constantly. They're big guys. So that's really physical.
Strong arms.
Not for me.
I like it.
But the other roles aren't as physical whilst you're doing them. But just getting across the boat is pretty hard because the boat is sort of all over the place. It's wobbly. You're on this trampoline, so you're kind of bouncing around. So that's hard. And for me, like getting out of the cockpit, which you're kind of tucked in, is like this high. And so I'm like, I'm trying to get out of it.
So almost like the cockpit of a Formula One car.
Yeah.
Is it molded to you like that?
No, it's not. It's okay. Just sort of, we have three pods and two people in each one.
So in your role, you've got to have agility to get in and out and balance?
A lot of balance. Yeah, a lot of core strength, leg strength actually, just sort of getting across the boat. And it's just high adrenaline. So your heart rate's constantly up, you know, you're just buzzing all the time. So just being able to manage that and still do your job well is crucial.
And one thing to me that coming down here, and I know it's something you're very passionate about, is the sustainability efforts within the program.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to learn a little bit more from you about the steps you've taken coming out of Tokyo and using your voice as an athlete to share a positive message.
Yeah, well, I think firstly for me, like, you know, as athletes, we have such a platform. You know, we speak to the media all the time about sports. Everyone's interested in sport. And the power of sport is just, it's like nothing else, you know, to change perceptions, to just do good, basically.
Yeah.
And for me as athletes, we have a responsibility to do that because social media, the way everything's going, we're so easily accessible now that people listen to us. So we have to be saying the right things. Yeah. And to me, climate change, the planet, the sort of threats that we're under as a human race, I think is incredibly important for athletes to start understanding the issues and start speaking about them.
Tell us a little bit about your role within the IOC, because I know you attended one of the, let's just say, rather large events in Glasgow last year. How was that coming into it as an athlete, someone who isn't from a politics background? How did you stand your ground and put your point forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I felt so strongly after the Olympics. You know, we'd had this Olympic Games that had taken place in a pandemic. It was the most challenging build-up I think any athlete's probably ever faced of an Olympic Games. And to even host it, you know, Tokyo, they did a phenomenal job. We thought it was going to be cancelled, basically, until we got there. So all of that put together just felt like those ambitions, those courageous decisions, the determination, the resilience of everyone just to make it happen were similar to what we're trying to solve with the climate crisis. You know, they're the attributes we need. And so it felt like if we can make a video and use the voice of these athletes that have competed at the Paralympics and Olympic Games to talk about why this matters and why they want politicians to be ambitious, that sends a really strong message.
Yeah.
So we did. And then we delivered it at COP26 to get it to as many of the world leaders as we possibly could, which obviously meant I had to do a bit of speaking about it, which was terrifying. I'm not going to lie, you know, I was out of my comfort zone. But when you feel passionately about something, you're willing to put yourself out of your comfort zone.
That's really cool to see a woman in sport attack a role like that. Like, that's so different from what you're used to doing day to day. For you stepping out of your comfort zone, how did you approach something as big as that?
I just used all of the skills that I'd learned being an athlete. You know, it's the same thing. You have a target, you have a goal you're trying to achieve, and you put the steps in place to get there, and you're constantly putting yourself out of your comfort zone as an athlete. You're constantly putting yourself on the line. And that's why I think athletes are such good advocates for climate change, because we are those people, you know, we have those attributes. So,
well, especially in a sport like sailing, it's an open environment, you're exposed to the elements.
Yeah.
And the same with me is as a snowboarder. The first glacier I rode was in 2007 in Saas-Fee in Switzerland, and I've physically seen with my own eyes the glacier retreat. So now when you go and ride, pretty much guaranteed every day you will see a giant chunk of ice fall off the cliff face.
Wow.
And that's just become normal.
Yeah.
When it started happening 6 years ago, people were nervous about it, whereas now it's normality to physically see a glacier drop in front of your eyes.
Wow.
Break, which is
that's scary.
Yeah, scary.
You know?
It is scary.
And it's scary that it's become normal.
Yeah, it is. And it is, and it is becoming normal, like the extreme weather that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, we'd be like, wow, it's a once-in-a-lifetime storm or flood or whatever. It's, yeah, it's like yearly now.
No, yeah, yeah. It's, like, we had 40 degrees the other week.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. So how does a global tour,
yeah,
as big as this, retract its environmental footprint? Because for me, that's the first question that I'm asking.
Yeah.
You're travelling the world.
Yeah, I know. And 100% you can't deny and hide the fact that sport, all sport, has a big environmental footprint. But for me, it's about sports taking responsibility, like any other industry, taking responsibility for that footprint, doing everything you can to try and mitigate it, bring it down as much as possible, and change how you do things, change the system.
So what is being done today?
A lot of the partners that we work with, so one of our suppliers for on-site electricity, obviously we move around the world, but we use the same supplier to provide that electricity. And we pushed them really hard to make sure that every event we went to, it was renewable electricity that was feeding all of our operations. And what's really cool about that is that now, when they work with other sports, they implement the same practices. So actually it's spreading,
so
which is super
cool. So you are essentially leading the charge and setting an example for how it can be done.
Yeah, and sport can do that. You know, we're like a startup sport, I think. I view it as, you know, big businesses, they're big systems in place. It's very hard to change, very slow to change. We're startups, they're innovative, they're creative. They can implement new things straight away, and sport's like that.
Yeah.
And that's what SailGP does. And so we can find solutions. You know, we're working on the power boats that follow the boats, the safety boats, the coach boats.
Yeah.
They're on the water, they're burning fuel, but we're looking for electric solutions. So here at Plymouth, we're trialling different electric boats so that as fast as possible we can push the marine industry to transition to electric. So we have a lot of power as athletes in the sport, and we need to use that to transition faster.
That's really, really cool to hear. I had no idea coming into this that there was such a big step being made in affecting that transition to cleaner sport, essentially.
Yeah.
What else is being done? Because I noticed that you guys were doing some kind of charge situation on the boat.
Yeah.
What's the solar panels? Fill me in. Give me the nitty gritty.
Yeah. Well, so another cool thing that SailGP do that I really love is the Impact League. And so the Impact League is essentially each team pitted against each other in an environmental competition off the water. So we obviously race on the water for sailing and racing, that's ace. And then off the water, we race for the environment, we race for the planet. So each team has a charity partner.
Yep.
And if you win the Impact League each event, you win money for your charity partner. And so part of the Impact League is innovation.
Okay.
And so our team decided that we could use solar power to charge the equipment on the rib that normally when the boat's just sat on the dock, the engines are going, to keep it charged, which is not good. You're just putting nasty stuff into the ocean, wasting, which is what we don't want to do.
Yeah.
So we built this sort of test pilot, solar panel with battery, charging all of the stuff. Hopefully we can prove it works at this event. And then what's cool about SailGP is collaboration.
Yeah.
So then it gets rolled out across the whole fleet. So suddenly everyone's doing it. Yeah, so the impact is just escalated.
I like it. It's like a chain reaction. I was chatting to one of the lads on the boat, Neil Hunter, and he mentioned that they cycled here.
They did.
300 odd miles. Is that also part of the sustainability awareness of the event? Because I took my train down here, no cars.
Yeah.
What other little things are being implemented within the brand as a whole?
Yeah, exactly that. So it's all part of the Impact League. You know, so we're measured on stuff like innovation. So what we just talked about, measured on travel, how we get here. So obviously the bikes, perfect.
Brilliant.
But we're also measured on stuff like waste, how much waste we produce, how much we manage to recycle, how much we use our voice. So social media, talking about what we're doing, all the positive stuff. And then we do loads of things like school visits, speaking to schools about SailGP, about sustainability, just getting kids involved and educating kids on what's going on, which I just love. I love so much when you go into a school and you just think, I could transform one person's thinking and change the direction of their life. And you just don't know who that is or what it could be, but you know it's possible because that happened to me when I was young and it's amazing. So,
isn't it crazy how just one person can have an impact like that? And even if you only influence one person to change the way they live, but create an awareness. And I think that's the biggest thing in society now, is actually breaking down the stereotype that it is cool to be aware, it is cool to make change, because it's cool to love our planet.
Yeah.
You know, and essentially it comes down to that. So for me today, coming here and listening to what a new sport is doing and paving the way for that change is, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's exciting. It makes me feel proud as an athlete, you know, to be part of it.
You should be freaking proud. This podcast, though, let's get back to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
I want to know a bit more Hannah Mills.
Yeah.
It's all about mindset and motivation.
Yeah.
What's your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Not great.
Not a fan?
No, I'm not. I'm not a fan. No, I'm more of a Friday kind of person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Friday
too. Yeah. Monday's always, Sunday night, always before school, did you used to get the whole...
The stomach churning.
Yeah. Just dreading Monday.
So how do you counteract that to have a better start to the week? If it's something that you see as a bit of a loom on a Sunday, have you got any little hacks that you can share with our listeners as to how you approach that?
That
ever looming work day.
Yeah. I try and have a busy Monday. And I try and, you know, put something in there that I'm really excited about.
Nice.
You know, whatever it is. I'm lucky that I guess I have lots of different jobs.
Yeah.
A bit like you, I guess, and you're here, there and everywhere.
Yeah.
So you can hopefully plan to have something quite cool on a Monday.
So you just
kickstart your week. Yeah. Or, you know, if you can't do that, make sure you have time to have a coffee with a really good friend at work or whatever it is. Just something that you look forward to. And I think that really helps just get you going.
I think it's about, for me, implementing little blocks of time where it's your own time that you own, where you can enjoy it and look forward to it within that day.
100%, yeah.
It's exactly. Interesting though on this podcast, because we have some people that they love Monday, and then we've got others that are a little bit like you, and they've found a way around it to balance out the week. As someone that's achieved excellence and greatness and sailed at the top of their sport for years, have you got any life mottos or quotes that you live by as an athlete to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I think my favourite one that I like to think of if I'm ever fearing something or don't want to do something because it's daunting is a baseball one, actually. I'm not a baseball fan, but this quote just kind of hit home for me, is don't let the fear of striking out stop you from playing the game, which I just love. I think it depicts so much in life. Yeah, I love it.
So let's flip that. As an athlete, that was the motto you lived by.
Mm-hmm.
How have you taken that into your life now as a mama to be?
Yeah, I use it all the time, actually. I genuinely think about it all the time. You know, if ever there's something, like even being pregnant, it's scary.
Yeah.
I've never done it before.
I don't know
what's
going to
happen. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. It's nuts. And it's the same thing. It's like, don't let fear stop you wanting to do or stop you doing things that you might not think you can do. You can do way more than you think you can.
There's going to be lots of people that listen to this podcast that can relate.
Yeah.
There is a fear around pregnancy. So
yeah.
Again, as an athlete, someone with a voice who's living it, I'm sure there's a lot you can share that people will look at you and seek inspiration from.
There is a lot. I think, I'm getting emotional. Maybe just stop a sec.
It's freaking powerful.
Yeah. You know, as an athlete, your identity is sport, athleticism, it's mindset, it's all of those things. And then suddenly, you know, you try and get pregnant, you don't know if you're going to get pregnant, and then you do. And then everything changes, your identity completely changes in an instant. And I'm sure it's the same for lots of different people in different walks of life, but you lose your identity, and that's terrifying. And I think where I've been lucky is, you know, with our British Sail GP team, they've been amazing. You know, I'm still here. I'm at the events. I'm not racing, but I'm contributing other things. I'm still involved, and that's ace.
That's so valuable.
You know, it's sick.
Thumbs up to that. Women in sport, delivering babies and dominating at the top of sport still. You know what, Hannah? I'm so grateful for your time today. It's been an absolute honour to walk along this dockyard with you in the sunshine, and I think people listening are going to take a lot away from that and what you're doing right now in sport. It's huge, so thank you for sharing with me, because I've learned something.
Thank you for having me. It's been ace. You're great.
Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. Hannah Mills, thank you so much for joining me on this beautiful seaside stroll. It really is a treat to be on the road here in Plymouth, outside, walking and talking. If you are new to the podcast, do make sure you subscribe. We are across all of your usual podcast platforms. If you're walking, fair game. If you're commuting, even fairer game. What a way to start your week. I hope you enjoyed this one. And you know what? We will be seeing you next week. Have an absolutely wicked week. It's a wrap.